session number 17156, reel 3.
Mr. Chapman, reel 3.
All right. They were trying to get in with the Norwegians because they knew they'd have to evacuate, and they were trying to suck up to them so they wouldn't have any trouble. So they let this truck come in with food parcels, and the Norwegians gave all of them to us, which was incredible. It was so charming. Oh, no, we invited some over to one of our reunions, and they were lovely chaps. But it was dreadful, this camp there.
This is Luckenwalde.
Yeah, it was terrible, really was. Well, then, eventually, the Germans were driven out. I was always on the gate. I'd been in the... When the Germans were in charge, and that's how I managed to get one or two souvenirs when the Germans disappeared from us, from the camp at Luckenwalde. I went down to the German quarters and got a few bits and pieces, which I'm afraid I've only lost most of them. But it was incredible the things they'd done. I've got some photographs of shooting Russians and people, and I can't imagine it. Anyway, then the Russians eventually came in and took over. But a woman was to begin with. She'd been a fighter pilot. She was about 6'3", must have weighed about 18 stone. And she wore breeches and like a man, and she had a row of medals. Extraordinary person she was, and she spoke a bit of German. I managed to communicate with her. Anyway, eventually I was appointed by her to only to let in friendly people. So I let in some Russians. And these are Russian lads who had been taken by the Germans and forced into German uniforms. Anyway, she took them round to the back of one of the huts and had them shot. Her own people, that's the sort of thing. Anyway, we endured this for ages, and at the same time, there were two gates. One was the main gate and the one at the back, and where there was a field, and the French got into this field. There was a poor pony there, and they tried to kill it. Oh God, they were hitting it and cutting it. Boy, I never seen it so dreadful, though. Bastards, really shook me. And anyway, one day I was on the gate, and I couldn't speak a word of Russian. But all the guards had been doubled up in the goon boxes instead of one or two goons, about seven or eight Russians. And on the gate, I had a Pole who spoke German and Russian, who was my interpreter. So one day I was on the gate, and a German woman came with a little girl about the same age as my daughter, and all covered in blood from the waist down. And she got an Irishman's tunic, in a sergeant's tunic in her hand. She said, "I want to see Sergeant O'Leary." So I said, "Well, you know very well, this was started as a shamrock camp." It was the idea was that all the Irish were mercenaries. They only fought for the money. They had no loyalty to England. So they started this work camp, working on the farms and factories and so on. But they were sabotaging everything they could lay their hand on, so they just kept them working on the farms where they were taking the husband's part while the farmer was away in the forces, and screwing all the women. And anyway, this poor little kid, I felt terribly sorry. So she said, "Look at my daughter. She's been raped. I must give this I must see Sergeant Elliot. I said, well, you know very well the camp has been evacuated by the Irish for months, because we've been here all this time. So she said, well, what can I do? I said, what do you expect? I said, well, while your husband up in Russia, they were doing all the Russian women, and now the Russians are getting their own back, you see. So he was translating, and all the Russians were nodding. So then he gave me a wink, and I gradually worked my way through all these blessed Russian guards, and I got out on the road, and nothing hit me between the shoulders. So I started to walk. I got past the first, middle, and the end goon boxes, and as I strode along, the road side dropped, and I was up on this high track on a banked road, walking as I hoped west, and below me I saw a jeep, and I stopped it. It was a black chap, so he said, "Don't you want to ride, master?" I said, "Do I want a bloody ride?" So I couldn't even get in. I was too excited, so I hung on the side of the jeep because I thought it was Russian, because I had all American equipment. So anyway, I was so relieved to see his chest. So I hung on the side. He started to drive in. I said, "No, Russians." And he went a queer green colour. So I said, "Well, turn around and go back." He said, "I can't go back. I'm a deserter." So seemingly, he'd been with some other blacks and in his jeep, and they'd found four German tarts. And they located a farm that had been evacuated, and it was full of food and wine, and they were they'd been there a few days and having a raucous party, and suddenly these Russians burst in and shut everybody up. Unfortunately, he was knocked down, and he was underneath them all, and when he heard them driving away, he worked his way out, and to his amazement, there was his jeep outside. And so then he met me. So anyway, I said, "No, don't worry, you take me to your lines, and I'll tell you how you saved my life. Now you can make your own story." And I said, "I'm the equivalent of a major in your forces." So we went along a road, and there was a little platoon of American troops with trucks and a tank, and he'd seen it, but he tried to skip it. So he goes, I said, I'll tell the chap that you saved my life. So he began to change his tone. So we went down there, this young captain, I introduced myself, and I eventually got through to the American lines. I went through Magdeburg, and oh God, I saw so many. It was May and very hot, and all blown up animals and people were there. I'd never seen so awful in my life. And Magdeburg was absolutely flattened, the terror of it all. And there was one of the most pathetic things was a little trench each side, dugout each side of the road, manned by young Hitler Youth boys of about 14 or something, being killed fighting with their country. We eventually got to the Elbe, and we were lucky enough to be the last truck across on the pontoon bridge, because it was towed away after that. And I got to the American lines, and in a munition factory, and the big canteen there, so I queued up several times. And then one of the Americans said, there was a film show outside at the back of the factory, so go over there. So I went over there, and this film show came on. To my utter amazement, it played Night and Day, which was the last tune I had heard when the German Zeynepsdienst skipper let me listen to Henry Hall just before I was taken away. And most extraordinary thing. So it struck a very strong note in me, Night and Day. Anyway, I was then taken up to the airport, and I got to slept in a tent overnight, and there were some other ranks from a sergeant's camp with us. There were about 16 of them. We were all driven up there, and then I was suddenly dumped. They were taken away, and I was left there standing. Some old major looked at me, said, "Well, what are you going to do now, young man?" I said, I don't know, sir. Because he was much older man than I was, although he was the same rank. But anyway, someone came to see you. So there was a wing commander, clothing store, as I learned afterwards, and a squadron leader. So I saluted him and said, "It's lovely to be back." And I got my volunteer reserve things on my jacket, my child jacket. It was all scorched off. So he came up to me. He didn't acknowledge my salute. He went like that, and I was so weird, I nearly fell over. I said, "Haven't you read Diaros? You don't wear these things now."
Hit you on the chest.
Up here. Daily routine orders. I said, "You stupid cunt. I could only read daily routine orders in the bag. I've been there 4 years. Take this officer's name, put him on a charge," he said, to the squadron leader, and marched off. So the old major said, "Come on, my boy, we better go to Reims. We're back to Reims." And we took me into the Lion d'Or, the Golden Lion, which was then the sort of headquarters for commissioned officers. And that's where I met Bunny D'Arl, Richard D'Arl, the champagne man. He'd blown up a bridge to stop the German retreat, and they were after him, and he'd been immured in one of the calves, and the champagne calves they were put. He was awfully nice at Bunny Ayala. I became his agent over here afterwards. He was a lovely chap. He died. Yeah.
Can I just go back to when the Russians first came into Luchenwalde?
Yeah.
Because you were telling me about this female Russian Air Force pilot.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about this business of her having shot the Russians who had been in German uniforms?
Yeah, because they were in German uniforms. She said they'd gone over to the Germans. I said, "They had no option." She said, "It didn't matter. She went like this, you know."
What? Brushed her hands.
Yeah, and then the troops came in to follow up. And the first thing that arrived was a truck full of mattresses, and another truck full of mistresses, German girls. Then the troops came in, and there were bicycles left behind, and they'd never seen bicycles before. All these Russian troops were riding around, learning to cycle, falling off, and it was quite incredible, it really was.
So they had these German girls in captivity?
Yeah, to poke them, yeah. Yeah, it was an extraordinary setup.
But that German mother of the girl,
yeah,
who'd been raped, was accusing the Russians of having done it.
Yes, they had done it. They had done it. And I said, "Well, what do you expect when your old man had been doing the same up in the Russian front?"
Was it Russian soldiers or Russian dispersed?
Russian soldiers, yeah.
How old was the girl?
I was about 13. You know, I felt the same age as my daughter. I felt terrible about it. Yeah.
Were they doing much of that type of thing?
Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, crikey, yes. I heard all about it afterwards. Lots of chaps got away, and oh, yes, they were just, you imagine, can't you, after what they'd been through. And I, Stalingrad, I learned through this poll that Stalingrad, they won that back by sending in chaps, unarmed chaps, because they had a band of arms because they were spreading their front so much, getting them drunk and driving them in. And there was a mountain of them, bodies, and the fighting troops eventually, when they were driving tanks, climbing over the bodies, that was told to me by this Russian.
I think in May 1945, when you were at Luchenwalde, you did some interrogation work, some screening work. Can you tell me what that involved?
The Americans had shot up a railway siding nearby, and on it was a train full of cattle trucks filled with Polish girls who had been working in factories, and they were moving them away to some other place. And anyways, four little girls managed to get out, and they came to the camp, and I let them in. And the story I've given you tells of the awful things they'd been through. They looked like little boys. They had no breasts, and their hair was sort of greeny yellow colour, and they were terrified. I've never seen such a pathetic bastard Germans.
So they'd been forced to work in Germany?
Yeah, yeah. Incidentally, while I'm on the tape, the camp we had had been a sort of a Dr. Bernardo's. It was a lovely old Victorian mansion, and they built huts in the back to accommodate the French officers. Have I told you this before? All the French officers who were in charge at the time of the when the German took over, they were pushed out on the brink there, as far away as possible. And when we went in there, it was absolutely filthy. I never noticed it. All the top leading men, and there were bugs and fleas and lice, crabs. We got everything, and we were going around with a bit of Red Cross soap, killing about 80 or 90 of these things every time, the groin of our Red Cross pajamas. It was terrible. It took ages to clean up. And opposite the camp was a timber yard, and just beside the timber yard there was a bridge across a drainage canal from the Vistula Valley, and which used to flood. There used to be a guard there to check. All the young Poles had been conscripted into some war work, in munition factories or something, and all the old people had to show their passes when they went over this bridge. And there was a Gestapo bloke used to stand there with his hands behind his back, strutting around. And when the guard was giving the old people their papers back again, he would nod, and the guard would drop papers in the snow, and this goon would kick them up the backside, sprawling on their face, and laugh his head off. It was a huge joke. Anyway, there was a chap who had been wounded. He spoke perfect English, because that's what his job was. He'd been to Cambridge. But he was walking around there, and I said, the bastards are typical bloody Nazis. So they must have done something to deserve it. And then there was a German, the timber yard on the left of it, as we faced it, we could see a gap with people working on the banks of the canal, and then the whole stretch of timber yard. Then we saw them as they came opposite the camp, just by the bridge, and there were women. And this same goon, there was a girl. One of them hopped down to have a wee, and one of the guards got a cat of nine tails was slashing all across the face, and the thongs snapped off. So he turned it round and and with a cartilage and it brained her. And she was lying there dying and bleeding. So I said to this same goon, I said, God, what? I said, well, that's US, what do you expect? I couldn't believe it.
Where was this that you
Shubin, got? The Vistula Valley was at Shubin in Poland. Well, it was going on all the time.
I think you'd like to correct that. It wasn't at Luchenwald.
It wasn't Sargent, no. It was... wait a minute. I'm getting confused.